From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, one of the most contested questions in the feminist movement has been whether or not mothers should work. More mothers who opt out are looking for ways to opt back in. How much opportunity is there for women who leave their jobs and careers to re-enter the workforce? And how flexible generally is the time they get? And what about prejudice and stigma for women who stay at home with their kids? We'll take all that up and more after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. A study out of Cornell University concluded that mothers who opt to leave work and stay at home with their children are 44% less likely to be hired than non-mothers. Yet many researchers feel the times are good for talented and experienced women who have decided to stay at home to find flexible work that can provide some earnings and allow them to be with their children. How hard is it to get rehired, and what are the downsides? We're going to focus this hour on women returning to the workplace after staying at home. And we have a panel assembled, but first we want to go across the Atlantic and talk briefly with Sylvia Ann Hewlett. She's founding president of Center for Work-Life Policy and heads up the Gender and Policy Program at the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University and is in Cambridge, England. And welcome, Sylvia Ann Hewlett.
It's great to be with you, Mike.
Glad to have you here. I guess I'd like to begin by getting an overall picture from you because on the one hand, we have this Cornell study that I alluded to. On the other hand, I'm looking at another statistic here. 93% of women who do go home and do spend time with their families are trying to get back to work. About 74% do get back to work. So there's a little bit of a conflicting sense of how really successful women are getting back into the workplace.
Well, you know, the data I've, you know, created over the last few years is quite complete, and it does tell a story. 93% are trying to get back in, 74% of them make it, but only 40% find mainstream full-time jobs. And the other reality is, of course, that they pay a big price for this time out. If you stay out 3 years or more, for instance, you lose out 38% of your earning power. But I guess, Mike, the good news is that employers are really moving on this. I am able to showcase 34 new examples of great policies, you know, trying to pull women back in, you know, reaching out with a helping hand, because I think employers these days understand that there's a kind of talent crunch. You know, there are two baby bust generations coming on stream and all of those retiring baby boomers. And finally, I think there's a real awareness that you can't just kind of throw away two-thirds of female talent because they take a break in their 30s. So there's, I think, a lot of good news as well as, you know, disturbing evidence as to the costs of time out.
The good news certainly is that more changes are on the way and are already taking place, but it's still axiomatic, I think, that the longer women stay away, the less likely they are to get back in. It's particularly the kind of earning power they had when they got out. And the other side of that is there's still a stigma. There's still a prejudice about women with kids who stay at home.
Absolutely. The thread of amazing kind of positive news in terms of the data is that across sector, at least in the States, women only take 2.2 years out. In other words, it's not a case that, you know, women somehow, you know, float into the sunset for 15 years. They only really take a short break. And then, you know, over 90% of them are trying to come back in because the fact is two incomes, you know, are really necessary these days for a middle-class lifestyle. Besides which, you know, women love their work. What I find in this, in the interviews I did, is that there's an extraordinary sense of work being, you know, a foundation of identity these days. It's what gives you, you know, traction in your community. And I think that the work connection gives a great deal of satisfaction and enjoyment to women right through their lives so that they are coming back in and they're coming back in quite soon after that first break.
Is it, however, also not true that when you leave most companies, you're out of luck as far as coming back and getting reestablished to the position you might have had or the career trajectory you might have had before you left?
Well, that used to be true. I mean, I think that women were really kind of flicked off the table when they had the audacity to go home to look after that second child or deal with that elder care crisis. But increasingly, you know, there are great alumni networks. Again, companies are understanding that there are all these kind of boomerang women, and they'll be coming back into the labor market either to go work the competition or to be your customers and clients. So you better, you know, really care about what the terms of disengagement looks like and try and stay connected in good ways. Companies like, you know, Ernst & Young, Lehman Brothers, a lot of companies are beginning to remember to, you know, to remain connected, whether it's you know, events that you're invited to, you know, qualifications that you're helped to keep current with, or just, you know, having a mentor as you cope with being on an off-ramp. So, again, lots of new initiatives that help that connection really continue, even through a period where you're not formally in the labor force.
I think it's generally considered that certain areas are easier and better to get back in, to opt back in, and also the ramp is a lot clearer. I'm talking about accounting and financial services,
right.
Big retail. Are there areas that are particularly more difficult that we've been able to identify?
I think law firms are a little recalcitrant here. You know, it's a particularly rigid career model. Academia is bad, interestingly enough, because, you know, you would think that that would be somewhat flexible. So I think, again, in the data you can see, you know, sectors that are harder or easier depending on how fluid, you know, the career track is. But again, you know, a lot of change going on because of the demographics. I think finally there's an urgent sense of not being able to, you know, kind of throw away this talent or sideline it in ways that used to be true.
How much does age figure in?
Well, you know, we find that there are, you know, two points at which women typically do either take this off-ramp or take what I call a scenic route, you know, a little bit of flex time, a reduced hour job, a kind of non-standard arrangement. One is around childbearing in one's 30s, particularly that second child seems to be a trigger. But increasingly, another, you know, common reality is being forced off track at 45, 48, 51, dealing with elder care responsibilities. For 24% of women who are forced out off track, it's an elder care crisis that is the trigger rather than a child care crisis. And, you know, I think in some ways that's the elephant in the living room because increasingly, you know, our parents are living longer. And as lots of people have pointed out, elder care is a little less predictable, a little more crisis-ridden than a lot of childcare challenges. You simply, you know, can't anticipate when a frail elder might fall and break a hip, for instance. And so I think elder care increasingly is the other episode that, you know, can cause an off-ramp. And one thing I've been quite proud about in terms of the companies I'm working with right now is that several of them, and Citigroup and Time Warner are good examples, are beginning to get very serious about helping out with these elder care emergencies so that individual employees don't, you know, bear the price completely in terms of, you know, being pushed out of the workforce.
You don't have to necessarily sell these companies on the idea that this allowing people back on the off-ramp is not only a good use of talent and good for the company, but good politics as well?
I think it's, you know, one of those real win-win situations because obviously it's good for the individual. Most women are very serious about the need for real earning power these days. They also, as I mentioned earlier, you know, often love their work and staying on track is something they're trying to do. But obviously, you know, we're surrounded with kind of talent shortfalls these days. Unemployment rates are very low, not just in this country, but in many of the major economies around the world. There's also a kind of reverse brain drain going on with a lot of kind of highly qualified non-citizen workers in the U.S. Going back to China, going back to India, you know, where growth rates are very high. So many employers are facing shortages. And I think that's, you know, one thing that has really helped focus attention, really helped create this sense of urgency in the creation of some brand new policies out there.
Sylviane Hewlett, again, is with us from Cambridge, England. She is founding president of the Center for Work-Life Policy and heads up the Gender and Policy Program at the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia. Before I let you go, Sylvia, want to mention your book?
Yes, I did come out with a book. It's called Off Ramps and On Ramps, Harvard Business School Press. It came out last month. And I think the one thing to stress in terms of the book is that there are, you know, 34 case studies, you know, companies that are doing all kinds of interesting new things. There's no silver bullet, but there's a lot of great experimentation out there. And there's all kinds of toolkits in terms of how to get started. If you're an employer, you know, wanting to figure out whether these things can fit your needs and your labor force.
Good of you to join us. Appreciate
Thanks.
You being with us. Thank
Enjoyed
you,
it.
Sylviane Hewlett. Let me tell you who's joining us for the rest of the hour. I want to welcome here in studio Sally Thornton, who's president and co-founder of Flexperience. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have by phone Pamela Stone, who's associate professor of sociology, and she's at Hunter College, the Graduate Center at CUNY, author of a book called Opting Out? Why Women Really Quit Careers and Head Home. Welcome, Pamela Stone.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Glad to have you here. Also glad to have with us Katie Keim, who is Senior Vice President in Marketing for Service Source in San Francisco, who opted out for a while and now has opted in. Katie Keim, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's get your story first here. You were out for 2 to 3 years. In fact, according to Sylviane Hewlett studies, the average is about 2.2 years out. What happened that made you get back in, and was it difficult to get back in?
You know, it was interesting to hear Sylvia's statistic. I felt very average at that moment. For me, it was, I knew that I wanted to take a break when the kids were very young. And so for the off-ramp, it was around my children. And but I did know that work is just very much, as she described, part of the identity and my complete picture. So I always knew I wanted to go back. And my on-ramp was interesting in that it was a series of phases. So I actually started back as a consultant on a project basis, and that was a good way to put the toe in the water, and that emerged to part-time, and I'm actually back full-time now. So it was a progression back on the on-ramp, and just really trying to match the work situation to the home situation at the time.
All this talk about on-ramps and off-ramps reminds me of when the Internet first came about, and we were talking about the superhighway. Remember that? Was it a very difficult transition?
For me, it was not, because it was a word-of-mouth or referral-based situation. I don't believe that I would have been ready to emerge on a full-blown work search. Work search. It was as the kids were being born, I was ramping out of a full-time work situation and looking at consulting work, and I just knew that was the process or the path I wanted to take as I went into kind of motherhood mode. And then to get back in was a very low threshold, I thought, to try what might work for me at that moment. So in that way, it was not as big of a commitment, and it was easier to source using my network and people that I knew in the industry to start somewhere that might work for both of us.
But you've been finding that you can balance and that it's worked out.
Balance is a very personal term, and I think what has plagued women, certainly, and men to the extent that they stay home, is that everyone has a very different definition of what that means. So if you were to follow me around in a week, I'm not sure your balance definition would be the same as mine. But what I think I've aspired to is extending the horizon about balance, which is, in a given week, it could be very work-centric, or it could be very focused around the children. And I'm trying to find kind of that optimal balance between, you know, the satisfaction at work over some period of time, which might be over the course of the year or, of course, in several months. So it has worked, but it's changed a lot as the needs of my company has changed or the needs of my children have changed. What balance represents can be very different in a six-month period.
Katie Keim, again, is Senior Vice President for Marketing with Service Source in San Francisco. Pamela Stone is Associate Professor of Sociology and the author of a book called, at Hunter College is where she is, and the book is called Opting Out, Why Women Really Quit Careers and Head Home. Actually, I think, Professor Stone, many are either forced out or, because of inflexible hours and increased workloads, feel they have to go out.
Yes, that's what I found. I found that, in fact, opting out is kind of a misnomer, that as I talked to the women for my book, I found that they were really describing scenarios of which were much more aptly described as being shut out of the workplace.
There are a lot of women who feel absolutely shut out, but then they want to go back in. So talk about that. I mean, that,
it's interesting to understand, you know, as Sylvia and others have alluded, what I found is that women want, the women who fit this opt-out demographic, is they really do want an integrated life that combines both family and career. But they left not because of family per se, but really because of their inability to find any kind of an intermediate position. What I heard from the women I spoke with was repeatedly that their jobs were all or nothing, and that required them to make an all or nothing decision. So at home, they really do maintain this continued desire to, you know, keep work in their life. And as people have already spoken about, other speakers, they are looking to get back in eventually.
Home takes away from career, though, in so many instances, doesn't it?
Well, that's, I think, one of the interesting things. It's fascinating to hear about the efforts that Sylvia's involved with. And I think one of the things that's important for any employer to remember is that women who have left because they haven't been able to get flexibility oftentimes feel a little burned by that experience. And when I ask women about going back, what were they looking for? The number one thing they are still looking for is flexibility. So it becomes important to keep that in mind. And moreover, I think that demand and that desire for flexibility is often increased by their time at home because they are involved much more than they had been when they were working. And they come to appreciate that maybe their presence is a bit more desired and necessary on the home front.
Has it been evident from your research that it's more difficult to get flexible part-time work once women have been on what's called the mommy track?
Well, I mean, clearly my work, I don't look exactly at women who are trying to reenter, but I look at women who hope to reenter. And what I can tell you is that they do feel discouraged. They are kind of classic discouraged workers. Their own prior experience has said to them that it's very hard to find flexible work. And their time at home, they're very keenly aware that their skills have gone kind of rusty, that their networks have grown cold. And they also fear, frankly, being perceived as a kind of stereotype. They do feel that at-home moms are oftentimes misunderstood. So all of those things add up and give them some trepidation about their ability to return.
What kind of advice do you have, then, for women who are?
Well, you know, let me also say one other thing about what I found, and then I'll talk about the advice. And one of the things I found was that women really use that time at home as an opportunity for career exploration. And about half of the women that I spoke with were anticipating, in order to go back to work and to find the flexibility that they needed, were anticipating changing careers, sometimes quite radically, in fact. So I think that one of the pieces of advice is indeed to see that time at home as a period to explore other options and to be open to going in new directions.
You would also agree with the wisdom that we heard from Sylvia Ann Hewlett that there, I mean, I'm talking now directly to employers and those in the corporate sector who listen to us, and there's a lot of gold in them there, Hills. I mean, there's a lot of talent for the workforce. You know?
That's right. There's a lot of talent and a lot of really work-committed talent. These are women who want to make a contribution, who want to use their professional skills. And I do think, given that they have suffered some loss of confidence and are worried about their ability to reenter, that employers need to really put that welcome out and be very encouraging.
Pamela Stone, again, is Associate Professor of Sociology at Hunter and the Graduate Center at CUNY and author of Opting Out, Why Women Really Quit Careers and Head Home. And Sally Thornton is President and co-founder of Flexperience. Well, just the name of your company suggests it can be done, huh?
Exactly. We basically saw this as being a business solution for companies where we can take all this talent and do exactly what Katie just did. So Katie talked about how she was on ramping as a consultant first, then went to part-time, then went to full-time. So we're that business solution that helps people get back in.
Job share has a kind of stigma to it, though. And a lot of people think in terms of flexibility, they think of job sharing, don't they?
Job share is one fantastic way of looking at it. And there might be a stigma around the term job share. If you actually look at it as a consultant team, think McKinsey, it actually has a very professional, collaborative, you know, wisdom of teams kind of approach, which is actually fantastic and results oriented. So if you sort of ignore the past stigma and really look at how can we solve the problem, job share or teaming is really a fantastic approach.
So what do you do? Talk about the process. Women come to you. You go to the you build up essentially a pool of those who are available to companies, and then how do you
place them?
Midwife them.
Yeah, exactly. So we only launched last October, and streams of talent came to us, basically proving that, this was a good idea. And we talk to them, find out what their goals are, their availability, you know, what companies they might be targeting, and we look at their goals. We sort of focus on our talent first. Then we've talked to clients, and their clients are leading companies like Genentech and Levi's, who are forward-thinking in understanding that talent is the biggest constraint to their business. And they say, we don't care how they get the results as long as they get the results. So we're able to put this great talent in a flexible contract consulting job. And the client doesn't care, you know, if they're in the office all the time, if they can see them, as long as they get the work done. And we focus on experienced professionals so they can hit the ground running without any supervision, really. So it's a really nice way for some people to just keep their feet wet so they never have to off-ramp. That's one way that people engage with us. Or for people who have off-ramped, we have one woman who took 6 years off to be with her kids, which felt for her like an eternity because she was in marketing. And if you haven't been doing online marketing in the last 5 years, you can feel like your skills are a little bit out of touch. And I quickly put her with Levi's on an interesting project. She got all the vernacular back about what she was doing. Levi's loved her, and it was perfect for her. And now she feels like she's got that confidence back. And if she wants to dial it up a little bit, just like Katie did, you know, take the consultant model, move it into part-time, move it into full-time, she can do that.
We're talking to Katie about the difficulty in balance and a different word for different, you know, kind of based on who's subjectively looking at balance. But there's also a balance that goes on here, not only between work and home, but a balance between what the company needs and obviously what the individual is looking for when she's deciding to opt back in.
It's really a business solution. When you were talking about a little bit of the politics and the social issues around it being, you know, favorable if companies are forward thinking and talk about this, it certainly does have social undertones in the sense of we want to have diversity of thought, and women are clearly not in the upper ranks of Fortune 500 CEOs, so, and law firms that Sylvia was talking about. So we have to think about how we solve the problem as a business. And when you talk to clients around that, it doesn't matter to them all of the other stigmas as long as, am I going to get my solution solved by a really smart person? That's all they care about.
Sally Thornton, again, is president and co-founder of FlexPerience. And I'm going to open up the phone lines. I know there are many of you who certainly have wrestled with this rather formidable challenge, not only women, but men, of course, who are involved in the process of these kinds of decisions. When it comes to sharing childcare and when it comes to economics. We're talking about programs that ease the return of women to their careers after they leave to start families and just the whole challenges involved in opting back in. As I said, there's a whole new lexicon out there about on-ramps and off-ramps and opting in and opting out. But you may want to talk about your own experiences along these lines or bring questions to us, and you can do that now, toll-free. Our number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and you can join us whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also send us an email, and our email address here is forum@kqed.org. We spoke earlier with Sylviane Hewlett, and she's founding president of the Center for Work-Life Policy and heads up the Gender and Policy Program at the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia. And with us for the rest of the hour, Pamela Stone is Associate Professor of Sociology and the author of Why Women Really Quit Careers and Head Home. Katie Keem, Senior Vice President of Marketing, Service Source in San Francisco, who opted out and opted back in. And Sally Thornton, President and Co-Founder of FlexPerience. Again, our phone line, 866-733-6786. You're listening to Forum. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about women who decide to care for family or for the elderly, has been mentioned as well, elder care in terms of family, just in general care, and then want to go back into the workplace and want to go back to careers that often present challenges and in terms of flexibility of time and all of that. This is like the Oxygen Network today. We talked about women and birth in the first hour. Now we're talking about women going back to work. But Sally Thornton and I were talking, again, about something I said toward the end of the first segment there, and that is that we're not only talking about women here, obviously. Men play a very crucial and integral role in all this.
That's one of the reasons we called ourselves Flexperience. If you talk about flexibility for experienced professionals, then it's really a business idea, not a social idea that we were just sort of talking about. So it takes away the stigma of it being a mommy track. And the reality is that when you look at Gen Y, Gen X, baby boomers, there's a lot of data out there that says men want this. And so Deloitte actually is a great leader in this, Deloitte Consulting, and they have a new program called Mass Career Customization. And what they're saying is, let's not have people opt into a flexibility model, because it's been proven that a company can be very hopeful that by having an internal policy that's flexible, that that will serve their workforce. What happens when they look at the data is that women aren't choosing it because it's stigmatized. So when you make it a workforce issue, as Deloitte is doing, then there's no stigma. Everyone's in it. So men and women can dial up and dial down depending on what's going on in their personal lives.
Talk about that stigma for a moment with you, Katie Kame. A lot of women who go back to work will say, well, you know, I get messages, sometimes very subtle, sometimes a bit more overt. I have to care for my family. And so the message is, you're not necessarily as dedicated to this company as the rest of us here, who are 100%.
So that largely has not been my experience. I think that would be very, very difficult to manage. And, you know, I think my perspective on that would, you don't really have a solution there if that's the message you're getting from your company. I agree very strongly with Sally that this is a business arrangement and a business solution. And so as I look to structure my working hours in relationship with the company, it's largely centered around what do I need in terms of job satisfaction, compensation, all those things, and what do they need? And it's been a dialogue. I mean, what worked in the first 6 months did not work in the next 6 months, but there was an ongoing conversation about the needs have changed, and here's where we need you to be, and can you manage that change or not? And so that does take a lot of the emotion out of it, quite frankly, as opposed to you're not committed or you're not dedicated, which I think are really, really powerful and inaccurate messages.
Pamela Stone.
Nonetheless, that is what I heard a lot from many, many women, and it is one of the reasons that I had women who were engineers redirecting to become teachers, women who were MDs, thinking about changing careers because they perceived in their workplaces that there was that stigma. I had a woman who said to me, when you job share, you have mommy stamped on your forehead, sort of like scarlet letter-like imagery. So regrettably, those workplaces are out there. And for women who are seeking to return, you know, one of the tips is, of course, to do their homework and to find the companies like the Deloitte's and the which I profiled in my book as a real solution, that have a different culture.
Oh, Pamela, I don't disagree. I mean, those companies are definitely out there, and I think that's the intersection between social change and actually just making a decision for yourself.
But I will say that I think that, if I could interrupt, I think the very thing we're talking about here and highlighting this issue is a culture-changing, you know, phenomenon. We can, you know, women coming back and showing that they are work committed, I think, is going to change attitudes.
You know, I've got to ask you, Pamela Stone, because there's been so much emphasis in the third world on microlending and Muhammad Yunus and so forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these women who opt out and decide to change careers or not have to deal with the stigma or whatever are looking to start their own businesses in many instances.
That's right. And the women that I studied were all professional women, so they had very solid skills, very saleable skills. And that was definitely the other thing they thought about doing in terms of getting back into the workforce. They thought about going very much as you were just talking, going back into kind of transition mode, owning their own business, starting up their own firms, doing project work, and seeing where that would take them.
Let me go take us to our callers, and we begin with Judith. Judith, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I am a physician in my mid-30s. I'm an OBGYN. And after several years of feeling like my being able to do my job and actually have some balance in my life was very close to impossible, I've decided to take some time off. And that was a very difficult decision for me. In the meantime, I've become pregnant with my first child and plan to be home with that child for a brief period, but definitely would like to return to work. And what I've found in just a few months that I've taken off is in sort of researching career counselors and reentry programs and things like that, is that there is definitely a stigma for women physicians to work part-time And there are very few alternatives, really, at this sort of level of training, and very few advisors for me. And I'm just curious if through your research you found similar things with other women physicians, and any recommendations?
Pamela Stone.
Yeah, I did have a number of physicians in my sample, and unfortunately, they were finding similar to you that they were not clear about what they were going to be doing. Some of them were thinking about using their medical expertise to take other kinds of jobs, advisory jobs, that kind of thing, where they would be able to use their skills but not be on call, not be actively in practice. I think, too, though, that something we're seeing on the East Coast, I assume on the West Coast as well, is we are starting to see more group practices where there is more flexibility of schedule. So that would be another thing that I would say to look into, because many of these new group practices do have a rotating basis of being on call that does afford some flexibility.
Let me thank Judith for her call. And it is a real problem. I want to go to more of your calls. So in the meantime, David, thanks for waiting. You're on.
I got a low battery, so I'll make it quick. I would just encourage all the women and men, for that matter, listening to take charge, take stock of their skill set. In my wife's case, she's in design. She can market that as a consultant. She's gone back to her former employer on a part-time basis, 15 to 20 hours a week, and it's an ongoing conversation. They'd love to have her there every day. She goes in one day a week, and we split the management of the home and the kids so she can work some at night. And to the employers, flexibility is the key word. It doesn't have to be 8 to 5. It doesn't have to be 9 to 6, and you can have talent, and you can succeed with folks carrying on the burden of raising a family and also contributing to your company.
Thank you for that, David. In fact, dovetailing with David's call, here's Dave from Redwood City, who says, do your guests work with stay-at-home fathers? I've been home for over 10 years, and I'm in the same boat. Also, I love the idea of using this at-home time to prepare for the reintroduction to the world of work. We can start taking one class a semester for a number of years, if need be, in a new career area. Well, Sally Thornton, you're working with the husbands and fathers as well?
We are. We actually placed one the other week at one of our great clients. It doesn't matter what gender you are. If you need flexibility and you're highly skilled, we want to help solve the problem. And, perfect accountability model for a company is it doesn't matter how you get the work done. So let's just think about the metrics for success for the business. And flexibility is just one tool that will allow you to get the people who can get that work done. Because if you have a flexible mindset, your company is going to attract and retain the best people. And that's the biggest constraint that business managers have.
Katie Keem, there's a listener from Berkeley named Leslie who writes, and I wonder what you would say to her, given your experience by contrast. She says, I didn't leave the job market for home life, went to grad school. It was an added benefit that I could spend more time with my daughter over those years. Maybe I educated myself out of the market, but I'm finding it really hard to reenter the world of gainful employment. It's been quite a while since I graduated, have been consistently seeking. The positions I have been offered have been also low paid and not challenging. I love academics and teaching in higher ed, but have, generally speaking, given up and am now looking elsewhere. It's discouraging. I mean,
well, David just said something about taking charge, and I think there is a group of women that are taking charge and do find it frustrating. So it's certainly not easy, but I don't think, despair is on the horizon. The flexibility that I'm seeing in my colleague of women friends is just unbelievable. They all have a different working model. And, I recently spoke with some of the women graduating from the Haas Business School a few weeks back, and what seemed to be most limiting in the audience was the women's sense of themselves and what they could actually accomplish. And so that was, for me, the most discouraging, because you had this immense talent in the room, and if given half a chance to demonstrate what they were capable of, there would be employers, I think, climbing all over each other to get these women back into their organizations and models that make sense. So from my perspective, and I guess in form of advice, is just finding that way to get a taste, whether that is by a project or by lending a hand in some instances, and I don't think all the elements can be aligned right out of the door. I don't think the compensation is going to be perfect, the work is going to be amazingly challenging, and the work environment is going to be ideal. And so, maybe that's not the right way of looking at it, but I guess I try to examine how I could make those trade-offs to just get back in and take control of some of those things and start demonstrating my potential.
You want to add anything to that, Pamela Stone?
Well, I would say, too, that volunteer work, I found that many women that I spoke with discovered real interest with their volunteer work, and they were also able to keep their skills sharp. Not as sharp as being on the job full-time, don't get me wrong, or even part-time, but on the other hand, they were able to both keep their hand in and put something on their resume so that there wasn't just a blank space where those years at home had been.
Here's a listener getting back to men and their role. Peter in Mountain View writes, I elected not to work the first 6 months after my wife and I had our first child. I had no idea how much trouble this would cause. I went without a job for an additional 12 months for a full year and a half sans employment. Nobody would give me the time of day. It was insane. I'm a PhD research physicist, so my work is academic or quasi-academic in nature, but big warning for men or women who want to go into science. Here's a listener who says, your show seems to be all about business women and not those in the nonprofit sector. I have found those jobs are not very flexible because hours need to be covered. You're also only talking about upper-class professional women, not average women. Here's Helen who says, I disagree with this entire premise. We're talking about the wealthy. Only a small percentage of the population can opt out economically. The rest of us have to work to buy food and pay the mortgage and rent. Get real. Let's talk about flexible work schedules, free daycare, and better medical care for our elderly parents. Now, that's applicable to the rest of us schedules. Well, you're a sociologist, Pamela Stone, and we're talking about class differences here. Go tackle
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And I hear what she says, and I say, right on. But let me also say it's not as small a group as people think. About 25% of college-educated women married with kids are listing as their main occupation staying home and taking care of home and family. So that's not a small number. It's not at the growing number that everyone oftentimes posits. There's a lot of talk about the opt-out revolution. But there has been a stable and significant group of highly educated, talented women who are at home for quite a long time, at a time that's seen a lot of other changes that would lead us to believe that that group maybe would be smaller, if not, not bigger.
We'll go to more of your calls. Here's Joel. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. My wife and I both off-ramped. She for 3 years, and then she went back to the workforce, and I took 2 years off. And I think a big factor for us certainly, and probably for a lot of other people, is the amount of time that you're on the off-ramp. And I'm speaking a bit subjectively here, but it seems that the longer that you do take off, the more difficult it is to get back in. And for me, after 2 years, it was difficult. There was a bit of a stigma, but I got back in. I'm back full time. My sort of in the same career, sales and marketing, that I was in. My wife chose to go to law school during that 3 years off. A bit of a challenge when you have kids, and it worked out for her, and she completely changed careers, and that was a big boon to her long-term career planning. So those two things worked out for us, but I think the amount of time is a big factor, so I'm wondering if that's been the case for others.
Certainly from your research, Pamela Stone?
Yes, absolutely. And I think obviously the longer women are out, the less confident they are about their ability to reenter. So it really has a psychological effect. So I think that's something when people make this decision, when women or men make this decision to off-ramp, is very much to have a strategic timetable and think about, when you're going to be getting back and keep that in mind.
Let's talk a little bit more about that psychological effect, Katie Keem, with you. I mean, suddenly, you're on a career trajectory, and then you're a mom, and you're a stay-at-home mom, and it's a whole different identity, really. I mean, that has to have certain kind of psychological impact one way or the other.
No, I think it does, and I think what women struggle with is trying to understand what that balance is for them. There is a part of you that says, well, I don't want to have this strong identification from work because somehow it detracts from my identification as a mother. It means that I am making a trade-off, that that's not as important to me. And for whatever reason, I think people can be very judgmental about that. And that may have been kind of the whole on-ramp process for me. I wonder if that was more about, just me struggling with the identity and what the balance was for me as opposed to the work schedule. And where I arrived at a place is that it's incredibly meaningful for me. I describe it in terms of psychic income, much more than actual physical income. And it took me a while to arrive at, it is okay for me to identify part of myself in my work environment, and that doesn't necessarily detract from me as a mother. But it's a challenge. It's a complete challenge.
And we go to more calls. Aaliyah from Pismo Beach. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say thank you for this program because I think it's something that a lot of mothers that I know have gotten out of the workforce and just have no idea how they can possibly go back in. They work full time, and they're trying to figure out that balance. And I think the importance of networking, which some of your guests have mentioned, is extremely important to try to keep that connection. I am entering back after 5 years of a high-tech marketing career. I moved out of the Silicon Valley for my husband's job and have been doing work part-time over the phone, email, that kind of thing to just keep the fires burning, to keep my knowledge up, to get the vernacular back. Because you find that you kind of lose that after you're out dealing with, the kids and everything.
Yeah. Well said, yeah. And Sally Thornton, yeah. Please.
Well, we place marketing, finance, and HR people. So when we were interviewing marketing and finance people in particular, this how long can you take off and how do we keep our skills current was critical. Because in finance, if you haven't been in the workforce in the last 5 years, you're not going to have depth of Sarbanes-Oxley and SOX and all the new regulations. And we talked about this with marketing. If you haven't been in marketing, the tools have changed with online. So it does behoove people to keep their skills current, whether it's through Haas Business School or whatever their alum school is about networking, well, skills current, keeping the vernacular that she was just talking about, and your confidence. It's a balance between the real technical skills and understanding what's going on with your industry, whether it's medical or marketing or whatever, and also keeping your network with your former employer, because that's the person who you've most proven yourself to. So what Katie did was a great example of being able to go back to someone who knows your work product, and you can say, I'm going to be able to solve your problem. I've proven myself to you. But there are a lot of companies that still aren't that smart about how to utilize them, and that's where we try, what Flexperience says, we're going to try and get you a broader array of companies who are leading in this area.
What do you bill these companies, just for the record?
Sure. So most of our rates are basically $100 bill rates or above. So the earlier question around class. It does make a difference. I think when you have experienced professionals who've proven themselves and been able to work independently and they can plug and play, companies are more easily, I find, signing up for that because there's such a lack of performance management, et cetera. So they like people who can come in and knock it out of the park and they're proven. What I do think, though, works for the greater good is when these professionals are successful, it shows how the model works. And then the companies start to think creatively about how the whole company should realign themselves. So it's definitely a leading trend, and we're part of a wave, but I do think this is going to be a bigger implication for all industries and all levels.
Aaliyah, well, I thank you for the call. I'm sorry, Pamela Stone, yeah.
No, this is Katie. On Sally, which was, for me, I think there was this point that I wasn't sure how this flexibility was working for the company, and then the company hired a VP level part-time. And for me, that was complete endorsement of a flexible strategy that was working, and that's when you try to think about more than yourself and leading a bigger change, which is, if you can instigate in a company how to think more about different models at work, whether they're for women or for men, that's when it starts to feel like there's a positive effect, where people have success in the model, which I'm not sure ever came out of the job share model, but the more flexible models seem to be, employers are basically saying it's not how you get the work done, it's just if you get the work done in the way that we're expecting. That's changed.
Exactly.
Susan, welcome. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. I have recently moved from San Diego, and I'm a stay-at-home mom right now. And I don't have the local network and the local companies that you've been talking about, going back to some of your previous employers. And I'm wondering, are there any other resources locally? I have a background in human resources, and how do I sort of tap into this market here that is a bit unfamiliar?
I think Sally Thornton would like to sign you up, maybe. Huh?
FlexperienceStaffing.com.
Well, this is Pam, and let me just say that this is a huge new area of work, and there's a lot of work-life networks, a lot of work-life conferences. I just spent all day at one yesterday, really looking for ideas and putting ideas out there so that you can get on the web, I think, and find things. And also, I think, don't forget, it was mentioned earlier, your alumni networks. projects. I think many, many schools and universities are starting to understand that women in particular, these are often aimed at women, but not only, are looking for career changes or to re-enter, and they're starting to put on programs oftentimes to help you network with fellow alums in your area.
And Tina Larberg reminds me that our website will have some websites and resources on it. You can go, of course, to kqed.org, www.kqed.org, and access more additional information. And let me thank Susan for her call. I want to go to an email here that gets, you know, when I started this, of course, we've been talking about men and the role that men play in this and so forth, but it really is gets us back to sexual politics and feminism issues and so forth. And here's Jen who says, I have not had kids yet, but when talking with my mother about possibly staying home for a few years after having kids, my mom argued that the feminist movement worked hard so that I could be able to work instead of staying home. But I argue that my understanding of the feminist movement was to give us the choice of staying home or going back to work. Any thoughts on this?
Amen.
Amen. choice.
Well, there's definitely a generation gap here in sort of understanding of feminism. There's no question. And younger women I interviewed in the 30s and 40s, you know, definitely side with the daughter's point of view. I think what's important, though, to understand is that we may not have quite the full range of choice as women that we think we have. And so it's very important to keep pushing to make change and to make the kinds of changes that we've been talking about on this program. Yeah.
There was, for a while there, early on, I don't know, was it phase three of feminism, the different waves
that's
they
right.
talk about with feminism?
That's the choice
yeah.
Feminism is the third wave, that's right. And it's very much a prevailing understanding of feminism today among younger women.
During the earlier phase, though, I was just thinking, you know, there was almost a kind of much stronger stigma about not having an identity outside of the home. And mm-hmm. even people like Betty Friedan, who was a very difficult interview, that's in my book, but nevertheless was willing to say quite stridently that women should have this choice of staying home and shouldn't have the onus of feeling, you know, they have to prove themselves out in the workplace and get an identity there.
Well, absolutely. I was just going to say, absolutely, the problem with that model is that it has an implicit judgment. And this is a very personal choice, mm-hmm. both for the individual as well as for the family and what works for the model. And so the ultimate feminism is really being able to have at your disposal a number of choices that work for you at any given moment and for your family.
And we're going next to Boston. Lisa, joining us, listening to us on Sirius.
Hi there. I'm Lisa Levy, and I am with Catalyst, which is a organization in New York, a member organization, and have been doing consulting in this space for quite a long time.
But are you listening to us on Sirius, was my question.
Yes, I was listening to you through the internet.
On the internet, okay. Just I wanted to – please go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry.
And I was just going to comment on, I think, what I've seen in my work, which very much speaks to what you're talking about, is this – interest in both alumni and you know, companies really trying to help women and men find a path back in. I mean, I've really seen so much more interest and this being such so much more of a central concern and something they're focused on. And that has been, I think that it's sort of an inflection point, and it's been very gratifying to see that. I mean, I think we're at the beginning of a trend. And that's really just changed so profoundly.
Pamela Stone, agree? We'd be getting a trend here? That's what we heard from Sylvia Ann Hewlett.
I think so, yeah. Yes. And I think for all the reasons Sylvia said, I think the demographic forces driving this are quite, you know, profound. So I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, getting back to the feminism issue, I think one of the things that's great is that what women are doing, I talk about these women who leave as a kind of miner's canaries. I mean, they're alerting us to the fact that there are different ways to work. And the old way feminism was a kind of equal model, that women had to work like men. And what women and men now are saying, too, is that there have to be other ways to work. And I think that's one of the things that third wave feminism, you know, has contributed. It really shows us other models, and the demographics are helping us push those models further.
Well, we in public radio don't like to think of ourselves as proselytizers, but if we're putting the word out here to different companies and different people in the commercial sector that this is really to their own advantage, then I'm certainly glad and pleased about that. And Lisa, thank you for your call. Audrey is our next caller. Audrey, welcome.
Thank you. I just don't know what to do with my kids. I don't. I pay my high school babysitter more than I would get paid at work.
Oh boy, and there's the cry.
Yeah.
To solidify. But
well,
certainly,
one of the things that is very common is that women only take baby care, child care costs out of their own salary, and you know, men and fathers are parents too. And so when you do your math about whether or not it's worth it for you to work, you know, look at your whole household income, not just your own income, because it's not just you who's paying for those children to be taken care of; it's your husband as well.
Yeah, but you know that even in many instances, families who pool their resources simply can't afford child care. It doesn't work out arithmetically to be the advantage of the family income to pay for child care, for part-time jobs particularly. What do you say to that, Pamela Stone? Just curious.
Well, you know, one of the things that we push for is what's called part-time equity. And so to make sure that part-time pay indeed, is better paying, all the research shows that just the sheer act of working part-time exacts a penalty. So to try to overcome that and to try to make sure that benefits are prorated so that it's not maybe a paycheck, but indeed if you get benefits, that's money in kind in terms of health care and the like. So I think that's one of the things that we need to do to make these part-time options better.
I thank Audrey for her call. And our next caller is Hendy. Good morning, Hendy.
Good morning. Hi, I just want to respond to a caller earlier who asked about resources. I've just helped launch a new website called youronramp.com for specifically this population of women we're talking about who want to either stay current as they take time off from their jobs or to get back into the workplace and really keep that confidence high. I totally agree with what's been said earlier about confidence and networking and skill building. So our site is trying to provide those kind of resources for women nationwide, although we just launched a couple weeks ago. As you all keep saying, this is brand new and very exciting for women.
Well, you just
like
got a plug for yourself, and we thank you for bringing it to our attention. And I want to thank all of our listeners and those who called in for an hour, which I think was not only informative, but certainly I hope will provide some direction and provide some illumination as well as intelligence for people who are facing these kinds of quandaries. I want to extend thanks to all those who joined us. Sylvia Ann Hewlett was with us earlier. She's founding president of the Center for Work-Life Policy and heads up the Gender and Policy Program at the School of International Public Affairs at Columbia. She was with us from Cambridge, England. And Pamela Stone was with us from New York. She's associate professor of sociology and is at Hunter College, as well as the Graduate Center at CUNY, author of Opting Out, Why Women Really Quit Careers and Head Home. We also want to thank Katie Keim, who was with us, Senior Vice President of Marketing at ServiceSource in San Francisco, and Sally Thornton here in studio, President and Co-Founder of Flex Experience. I want to thank our producers, Robin Giannatasio-Mall and Kevin Guillory, with production assistance, particularly on this hour, from Tina Lauerberg. Thanks also to Christina Shaheen, Sharon Adam, and Elsa Chang. Our producer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And thank you. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.